12 employees of UNRWA. It has 13,000 or so employees in Gaza, 30,000 employees spread out across the Middle East where displaced Palestinians reside. And the response from the Biden administration was to immediately announce it was suspending all funding to UNRWA. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken admitted publicly that the United States had not even done its own review or investigation of these assertions that 12 members of a 30,000-member organization had some link to the October 7th attacks. And then what happened, and this is so reminiscent of Judy Miller, the New York Times, the Mushroom Cloud, Dick Cheney, build up to the war in Iraq. They go to the Wall Street Journal, and the Israelis provide the Wall Street Journal with what the journal then advertises as a dossier, an intelligence dossier. And they go further than the 12. They say that a full 10% of UNRWA's Gaza staff, 1,200 employees, are connected to Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And they say this is not just a few bad apples. Well, this laundering of Israeli propaganda in the form of an article for a major American newspaper was the lead author of that article was Carrie Keller Lynn. She's a new contributor to the Wall Street Journal. I started digging into who is this person because she didn't have a full bio on the Wall Street Journal website. Well, it turns out that she is a veteran of the Israeli Defense Forces. She was a militant opponent of the Boycott, Divest, Sanctions movement when she was at university in the United States. And her close friend, who she did a joint interview with for an organization that takes American grad students to Israel, she credits her with, during the 2009 Gaza war, creating the social media strategy for the Israeli Defense Forces. This is the reporter that was the lead journalist writing this UNRWA story for the Wall Street Journal. And once we started to draw attention to that and put photos of her in her IDF uniform and talking about her ties to someone she said helped create the social media strategy for the IDF during a previous war in Gaza, then these organizations she was affiliated with scrubbed all of these articles and photos from the internet. The journalist locked her Twitter account. But this was very, very clearly a sophisticated propaganda campaign where they knew which journalists to go to, they knew which governments would buy into it. And what they got is the Biden administration now being actively complicit in violating the orders of the International Court of Justice, which has Israel under watch for potential plausible genocidal actions in Gaza.
Finally, Jeremy, do you think on the October 7th investigation that it wasn't simply enough for Israel to say over 1,000 Israelis and other people, majority of them civilian, were killed in the Hamas attack? Was not enough of justification to go into Israel and then multiply that over 27 times to more than 27,000 dead today.
The Israelis, particularly the civilians who were killed that day, deserve the truth about what happened. The Israeli government responded with very heavy firepower. There's indications that the Hannibal Directive may have been invoked, which says that it's better to injure and possibly even kill Israelis than let them be taken hostage. They also made sweeping allegations about sexual violence being systematically committed by Hamas, that they have provided no proof that such a systematic campaign took place. The victims in Israel deserve the truth, and the 30,000 plus Palestinians who have been murdered with American bombs, whose deaths have been justified by the killing of those Israelis, possibly including by their own government, they also deserve the truth.
Jeremy, I'm afraid,
I'm
sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. Jeremy Scahill, senior reporter and correspondent at The Intercept, his latest piece out today, Netanyahu's War on Truth, Israel's ruthless propaganda campaign to dehumanize Palestinians. And that does it for the show. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is an experiment with time on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. WRCT is supported by Attic Records, located in Millville. Attic Records is open 7 days a week. They sell new and used records and CDs from a range of genres, including rock, doo-wop, metal, reggae, and hip-hop. Attic Records is an independently owned and operated shop that purchases used records and CDs from collectors in bulk or by unit. Attic Records is located at 513 Grant Avenue in Millville. For more information about selling records and new releases, is available at 412-821-8484 or at atticrecordstoreinc.com. And if you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities.
Thank you.
That was Tradgrass Oxtionar, psych rock out of Sweden from 2009. My favorite band as of late. Before that, Roger Fekker, Had to See Harry, and opened up to Nice Experiments with Knopf's At Peace from Xiaobi. People say our country is facing polarization like never before. At Inform Your Community, we're on a mission to change that narrative with civility, not hostility. At Inform Your Community, we know the best way to talk about difficult topics is to talk about difficult topics. We're here to educate, bridge gaps, and encourage dialogue by providing engaging, welcoming, and meaningful events that discuss the timely civic issues that matter to you most. To learn more, visit informyourcommunity.org, sponsored by Inform Your Community. There are a lot of things we can't control right now, but here's one thing we can: making sure our kids can't get their hands on an unsecured gun. Keep guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition, because safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org, brought to you by End Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council. And the experiment continues here with Tomasz Stanko Quintet, some really intense Polish free jazz recorded in 1972 here on WRCT Pittsburgh. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm
That was Oh Lord, Bring Apartheid Crashing Down. From 1990s Moorish music from Mauritania. The artist on there was Khalifa Ould Aid and Demi Mint Abba. Before that, Trad Grass Oxtienar from their 2009 album Homeless Cats. The track was called Summer Disco. And some Japanese acid folk from Akai Tori. This is An Experiment with Time on WRCT Pittsburgh. You can check out the full playlist up on WRCT.org. While you're there, you can check out playlists from a lot of the other great shows we have here on WRCT, like Pinkney Hall. Tune into Pinkney Hall. You'll hear tender little ditties that will lighten the heart, sharpen the mind, and embolden the spirit. Fridays 9 to 10 a.m. only on WRCT. Check out the Alternative Radio Program. The Alternative Radio Program provides information, analysis, and views that are frequently ignored or distorted in corporate media. Mondays 10 to 11 a.m. Couch Dancing. Funky, deep, psychedelic, electronic music in that. Couch Dancing with DJ Firefly. Wednesday afternoons 3 to 5 p.m. and re-airing 1 to 3 p.m. Fridays on WRCT Pittsburgh. And this show airs every Saturday night at midnight. Let's roll back into the experiment here. This is Johnny Little from 1973's People in Love. Thank you.
This is Brother Fela Ransom Kuti. This is one time I would like to say a few things. Men are born, kings are made, treaties are signed, wars are fought. Every country has its own problems. So has Nigeria, so has Africa. Let us bind our wounds and live together in peace. Nigeria, one nation indivisible. Long live Nigeria, viva Africa. The history of mankind is full of obvious turning points and significant events. Though tongue and tribe may differ, we are all Nigerians. We are all Africans. War is not the answer. It has never been the answer. And it will never be the answer, fight amongst each other. Let's live together in peace. Nigeria, one nation, indivisible. Long live Nigeria. Viva Africa. Let's eat together like we used to eat. Let's plan together like we used to plan. Sing together like we used to sing. Dance together like we used to dance. United we stand, divided we fall. You know what I mean. I hope you did, my friend. Let us bind our wounds and live together in peace. Nigeria, one nation, indivisible. Long live Nigeria. Viva Africa. Brothers and sisters in Africa, never should we learn to wage war against each other. Let Nigeria be a lesson to all. We have more to learn towards building than destroying. Our people can't afford any more suffering. Let's join hands, Africa. We have nothing to lose but a lot to gain. War is not the answer. War has never been the answer, and it will never be the answer. Fighting amongst each other, one nation indivisible. Long live Nigeria. Viva Africa.
Nerede konu kato tanavakasa olmalı.
some great laid-back, dreamy folk grooves there from Ninagashi, some off of a little collection of Nippon Acid Folk, 1970 to 1980. Before that, Fela Kuti from the 1969 LA Sessions, Viva Nigeria. We got Julian Lage in the background closing out tonight's experiment. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Hope you have a great night.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the Supreme Court ruled that federal agents can remove the razor wire that Texas state officials had set up along parts of the U.S.-Mexico border. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton said that, quote, allows Biden to continue his illegal effort to aid the foreign invasion of America, close quote. Elite news media, for their part, suggest we seek a hallowed middle ground between those two worldviews. Corporate media are filled with debate about the best way to handle the border crisis. But what if there isn't a border crisis? So much as an absence of historical understanding, of empathy, of community resourcing, and of critical challenge to media and political narratives, including that of President Biden's call to allow access for, quote, those who deserve to be here, close quote. We'll hear from Aaron Thorne. He's senior staff attorney at the Beyond Borders program of the Texas Civil Rights Project. That's coming up, but first, a quick look back at some recent press. A huge demonstration was held in the nation's capital on January 13th to speak out against Israel's violent siege of Gaza and to condemn Biden's weapon shipments and diplomatic backing for Israel. As Dave Lindorf reported for Fair.org, The Times, despite having a huge borough in Washington, D.C., did not mention the event. Estimates of the turnout, which included Palestinians, Americans, including Jewish Americans of all ages and races from all parts of the country, are hard to come by because neither the Washington Metro Police nor the National Park Service provide crowd estimates. But it's clear from photo images of Freedom Plaza that there was what Newsweek called a massive demonstration, spilling over into adjacent Pershing Park, with still more thousands of protesters continuing to arrive along Pennsylvania Avenue. By size alone, the rally deserved a story in the Times. But it wasn't just one isolated U.S. demonstration. It was part of a global call for protest against the ongoing assault on Gaza, which by January 13th had killed nearly 24,000 people and harmed and displaced thousands of others. Times editors were surely aware that large pro-Palestinian demonstrations were occurring around the U.S. and around the world. On top of the numbers and the global dimensions, this was the second mass action in D.C. in 2 months. In both cases, the lead organizers were Palestinian or U.S. Muslim pro-Palestinian organizations. Both demos prominently featured activists from Jewish Voice for Peace, making it a historically meaningful alliance between Muslim and Jewish Americans. Surely all of this deserved an article in the nation's leading newspaper. As Julie Holler wrote for Fair.org, if the New York Times post-New Hampshire analysis is the standard, we're in trouble. The looming contest between two presidents and two Americas